the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. Education, legislation, and enforcement. The ingredients for true change if we want to see less cruelty to animals and more severe punishment to perpetrators of cruelty to animals. My guests today are a dynamic mother-daughter duo that, although working separately, they are moving the needle in the right direction when it comes to awareness and change for the proper treatment and protection of companion animals. My first guest is Joyce Glass, who has practiced law for 23 years, over 8 of which have been dedicated to addressing companion animal cruelty issues in New York. Joyce has drafted and advocated for legislation in Suffolk and contributed to pet dealer lawsuits and rescue and breeder investigations. Joyce works with law enforcement to address dogfighting, tethering, domestic violence, and neglect. She most recently worked with Long Island Against Domestic Violence to be the first domestic violence shelter in Suffolk to accept companion animals. She collaborates with local agencies tasked with enforcing companion animal laws to ensure protocol is in place and followed. My second guest in this dynamic duo is Victoria Glass, Joyce's 16-year-old daughter. Victoria is now in high school, but she has been an animal advocate since the age of 8, when she founded Lucy's Legacy and Hope for Animals after the tragic loss of their dog, Lucy. Her goal was to teach children that animals have the same needs as humans and to encourage others to make donations to help animals in need. It is so inspiring to me to have such a young guest on the podcast, a first for sure. And I can't wait to hear how Victoria is able to keep up with her animal rescue mission while tackling a demanding and rigorous high school schedule. So let's get to it, because there's so much I want you to hear about from Joyce. She sets the bar high and is surely an empowering voice for many of us who want to help make a difference for our canines all over the country. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Joyce.
It's wonderful to be here with you, Jackie.
Yes, I'm so glad that we get to have this conversation. And for my listeners, I would like to let you know how I know Joyce. Joyce and I met through other rescue organizations, and I will say it was primarily through Julie Lathrop of the Kramer Foundation, who was episode 3 of our podcast. For anyone who hasn't heard her amazing journey and all the wonderful work that she does for homeless rescue dogs upstate New York, please check that out. So thank you, Joyce. Having said that, tell us, was there a dog or an event that, although you practice law and you are in the world of being an attorney and working cases in animal protection and animal laws, was there an event that led you down the path of advocacy?
There definitely was. And I think if you speak to anybody that does this work, they will always have that one event or that one animal. And so in my case, her name was Lucy. And in 2014, we had lost one of our dogs, and I had volunteered. I always loved animals and loved dogs in particular. But I was still practicing bankruptcy law, and I didn't know anything about rescues, and I wanted to get a little dog to surprise my children, but particularly Victoria. And so I went to a rescue. And again, I didn't know anything about rescues, and unbeknownst to me, the Attorney General was working on shutting this particular rescue down in Suffolk County, New York. And I picked up this little tiny dog named Lucy. And the story was that she had come from a shelter down south, and she had just arrived. And so I adopted her and I brought her home. And Victoria fell in love with her, and she named her Lucy. And Lucy loved Victoria right away, as do most animals. And we had all her records. I brought her to the vet. And then all of a sudden, she started exhibiting signs of illness. And the vet was looking at her records and saying, you know, she is exhibiting signs of distemper, but it says that she got her distemper vaccine. And so we really worked to try to figure out what the issues were. And there was really nothing that we wouldn't have done. And so we wound up taking her to a specialist, and Lucy continued to deteriorate. And unfortunately, she could not be saved.
What kind of dog was she for our listeners?
Oh, she was like a little Chihuahua Terrier mix. Teeny, like 6 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. And so after her passing, I notified the rescue, still not really putting the dots together as to what went on. And we did get a definitive diagnosis of distemper. And what happened was, in speaking to people over the next several weeks, someone had mentioned to me that the Attorney General was involved with that rescue. And so I have to tell you, I kind of wanted to put it all behind because it was obviously a very traumatic time for us. But I always tell my children to do the right thing. And I'm thinking to myself, if there's other people out there that are in a similar situation because of this rescue, then I really need to address it. So I contacted the Attorney General, the local office in Hop Hug, and I explained to them who I was and what happened. And they said, we have so many complaints that we cannot keep up with all of the affidavits. Can you draft your own affidavit since you're a lawyer?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so we were in a unique position because a lot of the people, they couldn't spend the money on these dogs they were getting from this rescue to vet them properly. And so, but we had a definitive diagnosis that showed that the records were false. And so there were some other aspects to it. And so what happened was I drafted my own affidavit. And from that time, I started meeting, and I will always say this, the people in the animal world that I know, that I have met over the past 8+ years are the most amazing humans. It doesn't matter if it's an advocate, a detective, people from other animal organization, transporters, vets. There is so much work that goes on behind the scenes that people never see. Calls late, transports that are arranged, spur of the moment. And so I started to meet a lot of these people. And so anyway, several weeks later, the Attorney General did go in and shut down that rescue. And there was a little bit of a follow-up because a lot of people did go to small claims court, as did I. And my promise to Lucy was always that if we recovered anything, it would be donated. And so we did get a judgment, which I did file. And probably about 4 years later, I got a call from an attorney who represented the individual who ran the rescue, saying that she had sold her house and my judgment was a lien on her property. And so she did have to pay with interest, and all of that money was donated to animal organizations that I had started working with that do work every day that nobody knows about. And so that's how I started. And what happened was I left the practice of bankruptcy law and I started doing this pro bono full time. It is certainly my passion. I work on a lot of legislation locally in Suffolk County at the state level, all on companion animal cruelty. And I think if there's any positive to come out of, you know, Lucy's passing, is that it really brought me to the path that I think I was always meant to be on.
Beautiful. I love that. And you know, as you're telling me the story, I'm thinking of all the other families. And like you said, you know, sometimes we don't have the funds to pursue a case, or if things get expensive or might be expensive, we get a little scared and we don't even try. So for any listeners out there, if you ever find yourself in that position, at least today in 2022, you can start a GoFundMe. You can go public with your information because you might find, like Joyce did, other families that had the same situation, and together maybe pool funds together, or sometimes it's easier to go in on things with other people. Don't let the lack of funds stop you. All we can do is try, of course, but I just want to inspire that in people because I know that I meet a lot of people who funds are the number one thing that will stop you from trying. But I also have met on this journey with the podcast, with the documentary, so many people willing to help animal lovers, adopters fight for justice.
And I will add this, that was one bad rescue, but there are so many rescues that I work with throughout the country who are amazing people who come in and are able to accomplish wonderful outcomes for dogs. So I don't want to dissuade anyone from going to a rescue. That happened to be one bad apple. And to back up something that you said, Don't ever think that if this happened to you, that you're alone. Because I think, you know, if I have seen anything in the last 8 years, especially when it comes to companion animals, the issues surrounding them are in the forefront now more than ever on many, many things. And so you can contact law enforcement. If you're afraid to do that, there's always advocates in your community. All you have to do is go onto any community Facebook page and you will find animal advocates that will be willing to help you and guide you.
Absolutely. I see that more and more now. So, and like you said, most of the time, 90%+ of the time, you're going to find great rescues. And the canine condition is a resource. I always tell people I'm offering in each episode people you can reach out to, connect with, people you can trust to go and have a good adoption experience with, or whatever type of need you have related to your canine, we can find it together. I think there's a lot of places that offer that nowadays thanks to social media. So we don't have to be stuck is really, you know, the message. And you're right. That was one event, but it led you to open up the door to this wonderful opportunity of change, of advocacy, and you've really made some changes in your own community, which is also what I love. I want people to know, like, it might not be national when you take it on yourself, but one community at a time, one small city at a time, then other people start to see, oh, if it's possible there, I'm going to do it in my city. And I've seen that snowball into closing puppy mills, closing pet stores, because people in their own cities start to copy what people in other places are doing, and then we're seeing great change. Can you talk to us about some of the efforts in you helping to shut down places that are not doing things right by dogs so that, you know, people are aware of the red flags or what to look out for so that they know to steer away from that and not support it?
So I would say the biggest issue that we are working on now is what a lot of states and municipalities are doing, trying to ban the sale of commercially bred dogs, cats, and rabbits. And a lot of people are not familiar with, they may be familiar with the term puppy mills, but I think they're not familiar with actually what that means. And so I will tell you that if there is a pet store in the United States that has dogs, they are purchasing them from puppy mills. And the reason we know that is because every dog, and I'm going to focus on dogs, but this does apply to cats and rabbits as well. When they are purchased, there's documentation. And so what a lot of the work that I do with the New York State Director of Companion Animal Protection Society is we take those documents and we create the trail of where that dog came from, whether it's from a mill in Missouri or Indiana or Ohio or Pennsylvania, and how that those puppies made their way to a pet store in New York particularly, but this will apply to any state that has pet stores.
And does New York still have pet stores?
Yes, they do. Yes, and Long Island in particular has the most in the state. And so what we do is when people, CAPS did a video in 2018 to bring light to the puppy store mistruths that the pet dealers, the puppy store owners, tell to consumers. And so if you go into a pet store and say, oh, and there's video of this, you can look it up on the CAPS website.
And CAPS is Companion Animal...
Companion Animal Protection Society. Yes. So you can go into a pet store and say, oh, where do you get these puppies from? And, you know, that could be a consumer just really wanting to make sure they're making a good choice. Okay? So that's where the consumer protection aspect comes into this. And the pet stores will say, oh, we get them from loving homes and there's, you know, local breeders and they're not from mills. And then the people don't know to ask anymore. And so you can ask for the USDA inspection reports of the mills where these dogs come from. You can also ask for, in New York in particular, a certificate of veterinary inspection, which is a document required of every animal coming over state lines. And that will tell you where that animal originated and who it was sold to. And the purchaser will be the pet store. And so then you can look up if those mills have any violations. And so when we were doing the pet dealer bill in Suffolk County, we met with the lobbyists and some of the pet store owners, and they make a lot of statements. But we said, okay, well, back up what you're saying with documentation. And so really what the documentation shows is that we did a huge chart showing the dogs that they purchased from mills and then the corresponding USD violations, which included veterinary violations, which are called 2.0 violations. They are pretty egregious, and you can imagine the animals living in those conditions, like what happens to them. And so that's a lot of the awareness. And that is the biggest bill that we are working on currently in New York State. But there are several hundred municipalities across the country that have already banned the commercial sale of dogs, cats, and rabbits in their own communities, either because they had pet stores or they didn't want those pet stores coming to their community. And the issue is twofold, because it is certainly an animal welfare issue. So we tell people all the time, and we tell legislators, that they are, one of the duties and responsibilities they have to constituents is to make sure that there's no bad business going on in their district, and for consumer protection laws to be enforced. And so we use that approach a lot of times, because I think people aren't really aware that maybe they're not animal lovers. But for a legislator, I say once you have been educated, you cannot claim ignorance. You must act. And one of the things we did find in Suffolk, we went in, actually Victoria was with me when I did this, we were trying to show that the financing options were predatory. And so we went in, her and I, looking for an animal and asked about the financing. And it was very interesting, because you take your typical family in a mall on a Saturday, and they went in, you go in and you ask about this, and they were leasing at the time. So think about leasing a car where you make payments and there's a balloon payment at the end. And the leasing options were on a tablet. You did not get paper. So I asked, can I take it home and read it? And they said, oh no, you just fill everything out on this tablet. And I said, well, what is the interest rate? And they said, oh, we'll tell you the interest rate when you get approved.
Oh my gosh.
And so we said, you know, coming from a bankruptcy background.
Yeah. I didn't know who they were talking to at the time.
I did ask the pet store lobbyist when we were amending the bill. I said, what happens if someone doesn't make a payment? Are they going to come and repossess their dog? And he said, well, no, that would never happen. And I said, yeah, but by this document, that's what you are doing. And so basically, when we looked at the interest rates people were being charged, they were, so say if a dog was $2,000 in a store, I mean, they were paying with the interest almost double, you know, over time. And so when we did the pet dealer bill in Suffolk County, we said, first of all, no more leasing. And if you finance the dog and there's a third party relationship, it must be disclosed, because some of the pet stores started their own finance companies.
Oh my goodness, these people.
Yes. And one in particular, he told us that, so he was in Suffolk County, in mid Suffolk. He would advertise in Spanish speaking communities in the newspaper for these people to come to them. And the legislator that we were speaking to, she represented a mostly Latin community. And I said, you need to basically save these people from themselves, because they're going to go in and they're not understanding what they're signing.
Especially if language is a barrier. And I'm saying that mostly because I'm Latin American and I really try to help out the Latino community here in LA. Simple things, just as, you know, such as spay and neuter and the rounds of vaccines that they have to give a little puppy. They don't even get that information when they buy dogs. They don't even know where to get it. So a lot of times that's where these communities have so many unvetted, you know, and intact males and females, you know, and it just snowballs into a bigger problem than just the one puppy that family bought.
Yes, absolutely. And then what happens a lot of times is people are paying a lot for these puppies. They bring them home, and it's a similar situation to what we went through, where you now have this new family member, and if they get sick, everyone is affected because it's so emotional. And now you're looking at trying to, you know, pay the vet bills, you know, for the animal. So there was in, I believe it was 2019, one of the transport vehicles was intercepted going to Shake a Paw in Nassau County. And I don't recall the exact amount of dogs that were on there, but they were all seized by the SPCA. And I think every single one of them was sick. And they were going to be sold to people that weekend. You know, that was on a Wednesday.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think it kind of, it also brings about the point back to rescues because, you know, certain people say, well, you know, I can only get the dog that I want, you know, from a pet store. And I will tell you this, we have a Yorkie. One of our rescues is a Yorkie. And he came from the New York City ACC. And I pulled him from the shelter because they had said he was sick and he actually was not sick, but he is a purebred Yorkie. And we have another rescue. She is also a Yorkie. And so if you want a specific type of dog, there are breed specific rescues who are really wonderful because they know their breed and they will not allow a dog to go to a home if they don't feel it's going to be a good fit. And so you can find, if you want a particular breed for whatever reason, you can find them at shelters.
You can. And, you know, it's funny because I know that some people are really stuck on that idea of I want what I want, right? Okay. I can't relate to that because I'm just willing to, I feel like I connect with a dog's eyes, their demeanor, their energy. You know, I don't judge them on their looks in order for me to say, I want that dog, you know. But for people who are still stuck on that, I do say that try rescue because the rescue organizations also, they're like matchmakers, you know. They know their dogs well. If you want a foster-based rescue rather than one with a facility, if some people don't want to step foot inside a shelter, find one that will go and adopt out a dog to you and save one from their local shelter right away, because that does happen a lot and you're saving two dogs instead of one.
That is absolutely correct. And any of the rescues that, particularly if they're foster based, they will make sure it's a good match. And any good rescue will always, always take a dog back if they're, not only if it's not a good fit, if circumstances have changed. You know, which does happen. It could be 10 years down the road. And so I think that's always a good benefit for people to realize, too, about the rescues. And I will say this. If you rescue a dog, and I'm sure, Jackie, you will attest to this, too, they are so grateful to be with your family. They are the best.
You feel it. It's almost unspoken. It's a connection.
Yes, absolutely.
Now that you're telling me about those leasing agreements and talking about how these pet stores just take people for granted because they don't know any better. Consumers just go there to buy a doggy and they, you know, walk away with so many debts. The founder of Bailing Out Benji, who is an organization, she's a lovely young lady who was on our podcast. That's how she got started with her organization. She was one of those consumers. She tells an amazing story that just had, you know, the hair on my arm standing up, because that's how she fell into being tricked by a pet store when she was in her early 20s. And that snowballed into her advocating. And now her big mission with her partners in Bailing Out Benji is to close down puppy mills around the United States. And I wanted to steer you toward this other topic that I was very intrigued by, because you have helped shelters who offer services to victims of domestic violence, and now that can bring their pets with them. And that's a big deal in this country. People don't realize how many women have to seek shelter due to domestic violence, and they can't bring their pets along and sometimes have to leave the pets even with their abuser.
Yes, this is an issue that I do focus a lot on. And it is one of the, in addition to the legislation, it is probably the other thing that I spend most of the time on. So the statistic has been and still is that 68% of women will not leave a domestic violence situation because of their pet. And when I started doing research on this area, she is now the executive director of Long Island Against Domestic Violence. And at the time, they did not accept animals. And so they had heard the same stories, of course, even more so than I had, about women in particular. I mean, this happens to men too, but mostly it is women that you hear the more of the stories about. And so I started actually doing a lot of research. I did tour several shelters. One of them was Urban Resources Institute in New York, which has apartments. And why I wanted to research it was to see not only how you can implement a program, but to hear from the families how they healed because their animals were allowed to come with them and that they were able to leave. And so I spoke to several families who said that they all healed together, and they shared with me how the control happened in the home with the animals and with them. I also toured Noah's house, which is out in Nevada, and they have a shelter that is a very interesting setup, because they have a homeless shelter and a women's shelter. And then right next door, it's on the same property, is the shelter for the animals. And it's very interesting, all the safeguards that they put in place so that no one knows they're there, like covering the yard where the animals are. And so I did all of my research. I went back to Long Island Against Domestic Violence, and I said, why don't you be the first one on Long Island to accept animals? And it took 4 years because, you know, there is a lot of, still there's a lot of stigma attached to doing this type of work, even for a place that recognizes that it is a hardship, right? There's donors who want answers, there's insurance companies. And so in 2018, Long Island Against Domestic Violence became the first shelter to accept animals on Long Island. And the stories are heartwarming. And every year I attend their fundraiser, and you hear from people who were able to not only escape a situation, but really start their life. And it's all because they had a place to go with their animals. And so there is also a website that was started by a woman named Allie Phillips called Sheltering Animals and Families Together. And the website is saftprogram.org. And that has a list of, in each state, the shelters that will accept animals, so that if someone wants to call, and you can call from another state as well. There are people that have gone over state lines if there's no availability or circumstances mandate that they leave. And I will say also that if you are in a community where their shelter does not accept animals, you can reach out to rescue groups. So I have done agreements for rescue groups before that have agreed to shelter animals. So there's always a way.
There is. And you know what? I'm actually going to place that website in the show notes for this episode and any other resources that Joyce and Victoria share with us, so that you can all have a quick and easy access with the click of a button to look up more information based on our conversation. This kind of stuff is really important. And you forget that they're just kind of other areas of animal advocacy and rescue that don't get spoken of often enough. And again, my goal is to allow listeners, their friends, family, coworkers, anyone out there to have resources and to never feel stuck. We just live in a world today, especially in the United States, where there is somebody willing to help no matter what state they're in. And I have really found that and seen the power of people coming together without ever meeting face to face. And wonderful things do happen, you know. So I get very inspired by the work that you do, Joyce. I think that for the younger generation, and obviously you've had a wonderful impact on your own daughter, what would you say to young people who might be thinking of going to law school one day, who are animal lovers, who want to speak out, but might feel that maybe legislation is too hard, that it's impossible, that there's too many roadblocks? What piece of advice could you give them?
Oh my goodness. If animals are your passion, there is always a way to get involved. You don't have to. I'm very fortunate that I can devote, this is my practice, but most of the lawyers or anybody in the legal fields that I know that does animal work, it is not their focus 24/7, but there are community projects you can get involved in. There are more and more, we're seeing these CAP programs. So for instance, in the first one that I was aware of was in Suffolk County, where lawyers can volunteer to be advocates in court. There is a law in Connecticut called Desmond's Law. And so lawyers can get involved in that. And there's student animal legal defense fund chapters in many, many law schools around the country. I know in particular that the CAP programs that are in Syracuse and in Connecticut, they allow the students to come to court to advocate. And you're with an attorney. But it's an amazing, amazing experience that was never around when I graduated. You know, animal law is more and more being taught in law schools. There are many, now there are classes that are animal law classes. There is
really?
Yes, popping up in many, many law schools. And typically the professors are practicing attorneys who are animal lovers, and so they're a great resource. There is a dedicated LLM program at Lewis and Clark, which I am actually a student in now, that is online. It was not online before September of 2021, but they recognized the need that people wanted to be able to focus on this area of the law. The students that I have spoken to that have shown an interest or are doing this work, I tell them, like, you are in such a better position than I was. I graduated in 1998 and there was nothing like this. And so if you have that passion, you will find those groups in your area and you can get involved.
I love that because, you know, I think that that's an area that also we don't hear about or talk about a lot. You always wonder, like, who can help in this? There was an attorney from Arizona who helps, you know, cases of animal abuse, neglect. There was one where there was a death at a doggy daycare because of a negligent doggy daycare owner. And he went in and represented some of those families. When he was on the podcast, his name is John Schill, a wonderful resource, by the way, who loves to help out anyone in any state with information, but he's only allowed to practice in Arizona, is what I was told. People looked at me, wrote to me and said, oh my gosh, I heard that episode. I had no idea you could get a lawyer to help with our dog, you know, because people do face these extreme circumstances, sometimes crazy situations, and they just don't, because it involves the dog, they don't think they can ask for help or get help.
Yes, and there are many lawyers that I know of that will help on cases. We have one that is helping a rescue get a dog back right now. He's a litigator who happens to be an animal lover. But we've also had DAs help, ADAs help, detectives help. And one good thing about being a lawyer is maybe you can't help in that situation, but you may have a network of people, right, that you can reach out to, like you were just referring to.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, another seed to plant out there for maybe other types of advocacy and change. And to know that as I was preparing to talk to you today, Joyce, I realized other than the message of spay and neuter, the message of legislation and pushing for the laws to change, to be updated and enforced is probably the most important thing we can talk about and share information on in order to see true change and stop seeing so much of that abuse and neglect and abandonment in our country, right? Isn't it the lack of laws or outdated laws that keep us from actually moving forward in some of these horrible cases we hear about?
So I think it's three things. I always say that it's education, legislation, and enforcement. And so when we talk about education, it's much more than the public because it's legislators, it's law enforcement, it's attorneys in the DA's office, the DA, him or herself. And so we spend a lot of time educating because, you know, you take for granted that, say, a police department, that they train how to investigate animal cruelty and why it's important. And they don't. However, I will tell you in Suffolk County, they were very open to learning. And so if they're open to learning, we will give all the time and resources that we have or refer them, you know, to who can help. And the legislation is the other component. And in order to get the legislation passed, we have to identify the issues. And right. And a lot of times that happens because there are issues that happened with dogs. Right. So that's why you'll have certain protections, you know, put in place for, like, we're just doing a bill now that's going to be introduced for dogs in open beds of trucks in Suffolk County. The legislator wanted a law, and so, you know, it was drafted and it will be presented.
Can you tell us roughly what that is protecting or what the actual law is?
Sure. This particular legislator, who has been an ally of ours for a long time, saw a dog in the bed of a truck on, I believe it was the LIE, the Long Island Expressway, and couldn't believe it, but it's not outlawed. It's not outlawed in Suffolk County. And so we drafted a bill. Now, listen, you're not going to stop people from putting animals in the back of their trucks, but you can put some protections in place so that the animal is in a proper crate where they can stand up and they're not tethered and nothing can be around their neck. And it's just providing more protection, but it brings awareness. That really is the big thing. And then what we do is we'll keep an eye on that law. And not only do we make sure it's enforced, because that's a huge component, We also then let the bill, once it's passed, be in place and sit and see where the loopholes are. What did we not consider? Right? And so, and then we then go back maybe several years down the road, and then we amend it saying, this is what we have seen. You always have to, of course, have your reason, because you're going to ask a legislator to sponsor a bill and they're going to want to know why. Why should they push for this? One of the big bills that we have to amend in Suffolk County is our animal abuser registry. And so Suffolk County was actually the first municipality in the country to have an animal abuser registry. It was in 2010. I did not draft it, but it is in need of being amended, because what we realized was there's no provision. If you're caught with an animal while you're on the animal abuser registry, there's no provision for the court to look at for any type of consequences. And you say, oh, how could that be?
That's a big one to miss.
It's a big one to miss. I actually just did a big study on this of all the animal abuser registries in the country and there's not that many. It was only 26. There's only one state that has one, which is Tennessee, and New York has the most of any state. But what I realized was they took many of them, the Suffolk County bill, and they really just modified it very slightly. So they all have this weakness in it about the consequences. And so then we will amend it. And so the legislation for me is always key. And then there's a lot of work after that has to do with enforcement, which we work on as well with whatever governmental agency is tasked with enforcing that bill.
That's amazing. I just, you know, I think of it and I go, it all sounds like it takes time and a lot of people and a lot of hands. And I think that's where those of us who are not in that get stuck and go, oh, it just feels impossible. But it's not, because look at how far we've come, right? And the fact that you're saying you'll draft bills now, the law will pass, and they're willing to revisit or amend it, that's huge. Because I think for me, when I think of the puppy mill laws and all the things that go wrong in that area, that at least now we have people willing and able to look at things, investigate, take video, do reports, and slowly we start to bring more awareness to maybe one day puppy mills will be a thing of the past.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is too, you have to, if this is something you're going to focus on, like my focus is companion animal cruelty. And so the big thing is, if you're going to go meet with a legislator or you're going to speak with someone in law enforcement, you must be very well versed in your issue and have everything backed up with documentation, right? Because one of the stigmas that I had to overcome was in Suffolk County was I was another animal person coming in to complain about an issue, but I came with solutions that could be implemented. And so over time, there's a respect that's built up, a professional respect. And so that evolved into, if there's a problem, many times I will get a call that I haven't heard about this issue. And they say, what do you think we should do? Right. And, you know, it may be, and then we see if there's, you know, a viable solution. But when I first started out, that was certainly not the situation. So for anybody that wants to get involved in that, even if it's, you know, putting together an event, just make sure that you have to keep the emotion out of it. Because a lot of times, right, these are people that are very passionate, but you have to be professional when you're doing anything in the animal world. If you really want to make change, you do it very quietly with a lot of meetings and professional emails, and just always make sure that you have your research with you that you can provide. And I think for me, that's always been the key.
That's perfect advice. I really like that, because you're right. We have to have a leg to stand on, for lack of a better term. So if you really are going to show up there and complain and talk to people who have a million other things on their plate, but you want them to pay attention to you and your issue, then show up with the facts, show up with everything in order. And like you said, I like that, quietly, because then we can really talk to people. We can really address it. And we're not going to get anywhere if we just lash out from the beginning. Although we do, we carry a lot of anger, but maybe we can use that passion to drive us to do something, but then do it right.
Yes. And quietly also means that it doesn't have to always be on social media, which I think a lot of people go to that right away. And so I think that is why I have been able to also get a lot done, because if you look at my social media pages, there's mostly pictures of my children and my dogs. not a lot about the work I do, but I think that is one piece of advice I would give.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And, you know, a lot of people do want to work behind the scenes. A lot of people don't want to be on that, on those social networks or having their daily work plastered everywhere. So if you're, you know, more of a behind the scenes type of person, then this is perfect. You know, this is the kind we need more people in advocacy and helping lawyers and helping to educate law enforcement. We need law enforcement on our side because they're the ones who can go in and take the action of doing something, but they need the laws behind them and they need the community support, which I always advocate for. And thank you.
Yes. And I think they also want to know that if you're giving them information that they can rely on it, right? So that's a huge piece. The Suffolk County Police Department has really been wonderful. There are specific detectives and police officers that, you know, are animal lovers. Many of them I am happy to call friends, and they have helped us in some cases where there was a lot of abuse going on. And of course, you know, the goal is always to get the animal to safety. And you have to just basically have your team together to do that.
And I love that. You know, we had Chicago Safe Humane on our podcast, and they help their local police departments. They give them the tools and the education, the seminars, the training, so that any police officer, anything that they come across, they're ready to take action and they'll know how to. I think that's a big thing, is helping our police officers, because they want to help us. But if they don't know how and they don't have the tools, it just kind of puts them in a rock and a hard place. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And I think also if they experience one case, it will change things for them, because I've heard that time and time again. There was a case where, you know, with a cat, one with a horse, one that I was involved in, actually, that dog is now with Julie. And she was a real success story coming from a bad situation. But all of the people involved in her case, including the bureau chief in the ADA's office, in the DA's office, rather, said, I can't believe, like, this is what it takes, you know. But, you know, you make a difference for that animal. And in the meantime, you educate other people, so that they can then take action next time.
So like you said, there's always that one dog, that one event, right? I've seen it time and time again. And the things that these beautiful animals will drive us to do or motivate us or support us sometimes. Sometimes they're just our support system and something wonderful. I really want our listeners to understand why those of us who do this, or even myself just having a podcast, why I'm so passionate about sharing this message with you. So thank you for that information, Joyce. And in all of this work that you do, Joyce, the most important work is obviously, I'm sure, being a mom.
Absolutely.
And having your children, who I've had the pleasure of meeting. You guys are such a wonderful family who really stay united. And kind of, I love to see that your husband and your kids support your mission and vice versa, which is how we came to meet Victoria. So at this point, I'm going to introduce Victoria Glass.
Thank you for having me, Jackie.
Hi, Victoria. It's so nice to see you again. Well, for my listeners, I can see them on camera. I know you guys can only hear us, but we are going to get lots of fun information and get a little catch up with Victoria. I will tell you that when I met her, it was quite a few years ago, and she started her animal advocacy at the age of 8. So Joyce definitely has had a wonderful, positive impact on her, and I'm sure her friends and her friends' parents, which is why I tell all of my listeners, hey, you just never know who you might affect in a positive way because you share information or have a conversation about animal advocacy and rescue. So, Victoria, you're now in high school. Tell me a little bit about how you still fit animal rescue and advocacy into your daily life as you try and get through some of the hardest years of school.
Yeah, well, I'm in my junior year, and so it's been quite busy. But in the last couple of years since I've seen you, I've worked on several projects, and they just keep getting bigger and bigger in terms of where I'm covering. My Silver Award for Girl Scouts involved giving out over 170 leashes to all the patrol cars in Suffolk County so that every patrol car would have a leash if they got an animal call. Then between my Silver and Gold Awards, I did a journey called the Breathe Journey, which involved donating pet oxygen masks to several fire districts on Long Island. I got my school involved, and many members of the community also donated money, and then we bought the oxygen masks to give to the fire departments.
So just for our listeners to know, what situation might come up where you need a pet oxygen mask, for example, that you felt it's really important that these fire departments have them, and you're spreading that kind of education to our fire departments?
Well, in any case where there's a fire or even just smoke in a building that an animal's in, severe damage can be caused to both their heart and their lungs if they inhale smoke. And so these oxygen masks are multi-use masks for, I think they can be used for cats as well, dogs and cats. And on the scene of a firefighter would be able to give these animals the oxygen that they might need to live.
That's really cool that you're so thinking outside the box already. It's amazing because that little thing can save pets' lives. And you're right. A lot of times in these apartment buildings and they're saving a lot of people, you know, you see the pets, you see it on the news, but that's that little detail that could make the difference in them saving the life of those pets. And what you were telling me about other stuff that you've been able to accomplish in your journey.
Yeah. So my latest and quite frankly, my biggest project was my Girl Scouts Gold Award, which is called ACED, Animal Care Emergency Directive for Animals. It started out as my mom and I going to an animal CPR class, which was a requirement for a camp I was supposed to DIT at before COVID hit. The guy teaching it was paramedic, and he spoke about the fact that in accidents, sometimes people had some kind of emergency contact if they had animals, and he knew to look for it, but because he was an animal lover, you know, not many other people did. When I looked into it, I realized that there's no set anything for if there's an animal either at the scene or if a person in an accident has an animal. There's no emergency contact sheet. There's nothing.
Okay. So there's no guide in place. There's no protocol.
Well, the protocol would be that an officer would wait at the scene if there's an animal in the car for someone from the local shelter to pick it up. But there's no set sheet for an emergency contact, for a like personal emergency contact, for if the owner had someone they wanted the dog to go to.
Okay, okay.
So my project aimed to essentially have a set protocol for any animals at a scene or animals that an owner, if they were incapacitated, had. So it came in the form of a magnet, a sticker, and a green envelope and an emergency contact sheet. The magnet and the sticker itself looked like a paw print that was green and black and said ACED on it. And there was a white oval provided so that you could write a location. You would put the magnet on your car and the sticker on your house. And then in that space would be the green envelope. And it was like very bright green, so it was very clearly an ACED envelope. And then inside that envelope would be a sheet that detailed what kind of pet you had, the name of the pet, and three emergency contacts for if you were in an accident and incapacitated, where your pet could go. And the whole purpose of this is to alleviate stress on an owner, alleviate stress on an animal, because shelters are stressful places for animals to go to if they're used to a home, and alleviate the burden on the shelter itself, because then it doesn't have to use resources for an animal that's not going to be there for very long.
Right. Oh, that's perfect. You guys thought of everything. And that's what, you know, what Joyce was saying earlier. It's like sometimes you put something into practice, but then you have to amend things. It's almost like you're coming in already with having thought of this ahead of time because it's a project. And if it would get implemented, and if somebody else wanted to pick up your idea, you know, or call you up and say, hey, we want to do this in our city, could they?
Yeah, well, we actually sent these kits out as far as Kentucky and Florida. So this was not just a Long Island-related thing or a Connecticut thing. This went very far. Girl Scout troops, I think we had two or three contact us, and we sent 15 or 20 kits out to each, and they distributed them as part of their community service projects. And so, yeah, if people contacted me wanting to hand these out, I believe we gave 200 kits to the Guide Dog Foundation for them to hand out when they're at their events each year. And so, yeah, that is definitely something that we were open to.
Well, congratulations. I think that's really awesome. And for you to have, you know, spearheaded that, I hadn't even thought of having something like that. You know how you have those magnets on your window at home and it says there's whatever, however many pets here. That's as far as I've gone. And you're right, somebody gave that to me. But I wouldn't have known to even do that. So the fact that you've created this, it's fantastic. I really hope that it takes off for more people to be able to have these kits. I love the idea. And I wanted to bring our listeners up to date a little bit on Lucy's legacy and hope for animals, because when I met you, I interviewed you about starting your journey with Lucy's legacy and hope for animals. And I would like you to just tell our listeners back then how and why it started, and then what you have accomplished through this organization for yourself.
The reason I started it was because Lucy's death had a very, very big impact on me. I was only 8 years old when she passed, and it hit me really, really hard because I had grown so close to her in such a short amount of time. And so I wasn't blind, though, to the fact that my parents had spent a lot of money and a lot of resources just trying to save her life. And I wanted to be able to help people who couldn't do that, because I knew that there were animals that couldn't be saved, but I knew there were animals that could be saved that people couldn't just because they didn't have the money. And so it started as that, and it morphed into this, you know, this charity where I'm attacking the root of the problem, which is that people are just uneducated about these issues. And so since then, I've educated probably thousands of kids on how to treat animals and how to go about creating change in their own communities. And I've also donated several thousand dollars to various animal organizations.
I love that. And I do remember, because I bought a bracelet from you once. Can you tell us a little bit about how you had made those bracelets and what they did?
Well, the bracelets were very simple. I used to go to, I still do this, I just don't have the same amount of time as I used to, go to various fundraising events. So I went to Long Island Domestic Violence, Guide Dog Foundation, organizations like that that were having fundraisers, and I would sell little keychain bracelets for $2 each that had charms on them. Most of them were related to animals, some weren't. And that was basically how I raised money. Now it's a lot off of donations, and for these projects, I get various grants. So I got the grant from Hershey when I was working on my gold award, which helped so much.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That's so cool.
Thank you.
So these grants help you, in essence, make these, you know, kits, for example, right? And so they help fund the journey of creating this whole project so that you can then send it out and spread the message.
Right. So 100% of the donations that we get and the proceeds I make from the bracelets, those all go to whatever organization we've chosen. But when I need funds for things like my gold award, those will all of that is put into making the kits.
Awesome. And what do you foresee in your future? What path do you see yourself taking, and how will animal advocacy and rescue be a part of your life?
Well, my plan for the future is still kind of up in the air. I'm only 16, but
lucky you. Those of us that have real jobs and have a thousand things on our plate, believe me, take your time. You don't need to be here any sooner.
My plan as of right now is to go to college for something English related. I keep telling people English major, but it could branch out into creative writing. And I think I want to go into the music industry, probably somewhere in songwriting. That sort of thing really excites me. I plan on carrying Lucy's legacy, you know, through summer and through college, and doing the most I can, whether that's continuing what my mom does and passing legislation, or, you know, just going forward with bringing this vital education to young kids. All of that is still deep set within me, and even if my career won't necessarily take the path of animal advocacy, this is still something that will strongly influence my life.
Absolutely. Congratulations. I love hearing that. And hey, you know, my career, I mean, I'm an actor, and that's what I do for a living and have done for decades. But animal advocacy just sort of, you know, it's right there with me. It kind of lives with me. It's part of my daily life, because anywhere we go, the biggest thing we could do is speak up, right? So anywhere we go in life, we use the tools that we have, and our voice is one of them. So I'm really happy to interview you, to be able to talk to you and get some inspiration for the young generation to know that you don't have to be completely devoted and become, you know, this total animal rescue advocacy organization founder in order to make change and to make a difference and plant seeds. So thank you for what you're doing and continue to do. Is there a website that you have ever had for Lucy's Legacy and Hope for Animals, or any information online where people can find out about future projects with it or donations?
Well, we have talked about a website in recent weeks, so that might be up and coming in the next couple months. I do have a Facebook page. I am working on an Instagram page because I know zero people my age that have Facebook.
So yes, that is true. Joyce, you know, that is true now for those of us who are older.
The Facebook page is mostly run by my mom. But an Instagram page will likely be up and running over the summer, and I will be managing that with updates about my projects and who I'm donating to. We're hoping that I can get a website going that will be dedicated to explaining what I've done, what upcoming events I have, and for other youth groups to sign up for any kind of, you know, event that I'm doing, whether that be just a talk or some kind of volunteer work that I need help with.
Okay, cool. Well, then I will go ahead and get the link for the Facebook page and add it to the show notes for this episode. And I want to thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished, and good luck to you. Good luck in school. Good luck with college.
Thank you so much.
I know that you'll always take this message along with you, and that makes me very happy. And thank you, Joyce, for being my guest. I want to let our listeners know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any individual or organization on this podcast. I choose to interview guests that I know are doing the good work of educating and helping humans and canines across America. Thank you, Joyce, for your time and sharing all of this knowledge.
Oh, well, Jackie, thank you for speaking to us today. And thank you for doing this so that people are aware of all the ways that they can get involved to effectuate change.
Absolutely. Thank you. Good luck. And we will stay in touch. Well, I can't say enough about how hopeful I am when I hear that we can indeed see change and improve old laws and practices. Things may take time, as Joyce pointed out, but our voices can be heard, and they do make an impact in our own communities. We have to stop being afraid or reluctant to speak up. And if we become more than just social media keyboard warriors, we can actually change the future of this country when it comes to companion animal protection. Joyce is proof of it. Victoria is part of that future. And just hearing all the ways in which a young lady at only 16 years old is thinking outside the box and affecting communities around the country in a positive way should empower you to start taking action in any way you can. Thank you for joining me for this episode. Please press subscribe on our podcast and tell all of your dog-loving friends about it. Until next time, hang on to those leashes. The canine condition. Come. Sit, stay.